Yep. The first one listed there, of course, is the organizational operational test. As you remember, you need to be organized and operated for one of those exam purposes that were listed in green. The one that's probably most applicable to those in this room is educational. And the regulations under 501c3, they elaborate on most of those purposes that are listed there, including scientific, charitable, and educational. The reg cites at the bottom of the slide, but this is what it says about educational purpose. It says that the term educational means either instruction or training for the purposes of improving or develop an individual's capabilities, or instruction of the public on subjects useful to the individual and beneficial to the community. That first one is really focused on instructing and training individuals. And then the second one goes a little broader to the general public and something that's beneficial to the community. Universities, schools probably meet either, but they more closely probably meet that first prong. And then there are examples in the regs of your typical kinds of educational organizations that are listed here. You see primary and secondary schools, colleges, trade, or professional schools. There's a little bit more language in terms of they build on the definition of school that you need to have a regularly scheduled curriculum, a regularly enrolled student body, regular faculty, et cetera. Again, I would think, given it, I think most of the institutions in this room probably easily would meet that definition of educational organization, but it does go broader. It includes organizations without a regular faculty, a regular student body, curriculum, et cetera. And you can see like the bottom, a common one would be museums, zoos, planetariums, orchestras. They may not engage in specifically instructing individuals, but they do instruct the public on subjects that are useful or beneficial to the community. So they also are an educational organization. You see another example, presentation of public discussion groups, forums, panels, lectures, or similar programs. So education does go pretty broad if you're educating the public. I would say it's probably one of the broader purposes that are listed there. Charitables can be pretty broad too. But anyway, that's how the regs elaborate on that. Do you have anything you want to add to that, Alex?
I'm good.
Okay. So now we'll go to schools.
So, and Preston started to tee this up, and we're going to have a, we're not going to spend much time on this slide because I think it's the next slide that really has the discussion points. But for the longest time, these four criteria have really been what the IRS looks at to evaluate whether an organization qualifies for exempt status as a school. And again, we understand that if you're attending the Essentials Conference for higher ed, presumably you've already determined that you're at a school. But we wanted to share with you sort of what those criteria are so that you just have an appreciation for sort of how it comes to pass and how you get exemption. But also recognizing that many schools do have ancillary organizations. And so as you think about setting up potentially other entities associated with your higher ed institution, how to determine what that classification is. And there are these rather strict, one would think, requirements regarding being a school, which is faculty and curriculum, student body. And then we get into the potential issue. And these last two have been long-standing requirements. Primary function has to be the presentation of formal instruction, and then any non-educational activities that the organization has must be, and it's not on the slide, but I think the reg says merely incidental to any educational activities. So primary function, formal instruction, anything else merely incidental. And the one thing that I will add, because I don't think we have slides on it, is online education. We have to sort of go to pre-COVID, and there's not been any developments. The IRS has been very, very silent on really issuing any guidance related to how any type of exempt organization may have changed due to the COVID environment and being virtual. And believe me, it goes well beyond higher ed and educational entities generally. But the conventional belief and the application that the IRS has long employed is that in order to be granted status as a, quote, school under 501c3, is you have to be in person. Now, it doesn't mean that all of your instruction has to be in person, but the IRS was not granting exempt status as a school. And the reason that that matters is because of public charity status and per se public charity status. But if you were merely online, if you met all of these requirements, but you did so through an online environment only, the IRS would not issue determination letters as a school. You may very well still qualify as a C3 entity, but you would have to prove your public charity status through your sources of support. We don't have any updates on that. Presumably, there's, you know, some question outstanding given the last, say, 2 years or so, as far as is there really a difference. But we do have an update, if you want to go on to the next slide and take over, on these last two criteria.
And just to build on what Alex was saying on, I mean, the statute, that 170B1A, little I that's listed at the bottom, because it references...